This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Now that the dust has settled from the shock of election night, many people are attempting to understand what happened. Exit polls show that a whopping 58% of all white voters in the U.S. picked the renegade GOP nominee. Latino voters, who comprised 11% of the electorate, were expected to hold the line for Democrat Hillary Clinton. Imagery of the sleeping giant waking up was popular. Indeed, given Trump's derogatory comments against immigrants and Mexicans, it was expected that Clinton would easily win among Latinos. She did indeed garner 65% of Latino votes. But the 29% of Latinos that voted for Trump was a surprise. If nearly one-third of Latinos who voted picked Trump, what does it mean for our understanding of the voting tendencies of this group? My guest is Antonio Gonzalez. He is the president of the Willie C. Velasquez Institute and an expert on U.S. Latino voter mobilization and Latino voting characteristics. Welcome to the program, Antonio.
Hi, Sonali. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, I have to confess I made the mistake of sort of making assumptions about the Latino vote, even on election day, with the sense that the very people that Trump was denigrating were going to show out in full force and it was going to have the opposite effect that he intended, and they were going to be that group that would push Clinton support over the edge. That didn't quite happen, and as far as we know now from exit polls, it varied state by state, right? What is your assessment of the Latino vote, and if we can even really talk about it in such a vague term anymore?
Well, I was concerned about the media narrative, Sonali. I have to be honest with you. There's always an overhyping. And in this election cycle, I think the Latino vote was overhyped. The Latino vote is unique in its behavior, but I think there is a black-white binary in the media, meaning they think minorities vote like blacks, and then you have whites. And that's just not true. The African-American vote is unique. You gotta respect its characteristics and its history. But it is a uber Democratic constituency, and Latinos are not. Latinos are a Democratic constituency. They're far more Democratic than whites are, but they are distinct from African Americans, and there is a right in the Latino community. There is a right in Latin America, and the right in the Latino community is stubbornly in the 20s. 25%, 29%, 27%, it's there. And
so you're saying that judging by past elections of, say, Bush and Obama, that percentage was always around there?
Absolutely. And what CNN reports that Trump got, 29, is not inconsistent with what Obama got, with what Romney got. He got 27. And McCain got about the same number. McCain got maybe 30, 31. So that's the Latino right, and it's consistent. Even as the Latino vote grows dramatically, and it did grow dramatically, up to about more than 13 million votes cast compared to slightly more than 11 million votes cast in 2012, the Democratic share and the Republican share stays pretty consistent. And so I'm not surprised at all by these numbers. The narrative that Latinos are going to save Hillary, these narratives are invented by political operatives. And Latinos did give Hillary victory in Colorado, and they did give Hillary victory in Nevada.
Right.
They got her close in Arizona, and but that was, not a winner. They didn't deliver in Florida.
Let's talk about Florida. Florida, very unusual because you've got Cubans and Puerto Ricans there.
yes, but Latinos were a better electorate for Hillary and the Democrats in 2016 than they were for Obama in 2012. because it was a bigger number of votes cast, and it was still about 2-1. And remember, Florida Latinos used to be Republicans. So, you know, it is what it is. The fact is that the Latino performance is not where the Democrats failed. The Democrats failed with underperforming African Americans and with radically losing the white vote. They didn't even carry white women. So,
right.
You know, there's always blaming the blame game after the Democrats lose. But they need to look somewhere else besides Latinos.
Right. 58% of whites voted for Donald Trump. Now, the narrative on the white vote had been that it was whites without a college degree that were Trump's main constituency. We find out, even after all of the disparaging comments and misogynistic comments he's made about women, even after the Access Hollywood tape, even after the number of accusations that have come up by women, these are white women who have accused Trump of sexually assaulting and harassing them. After all of that, 45% of white women voted for Trump. Among them, educated women, educated men voted for Trump. I mean, how do you explain this? Because it doesn't fit that all of these people are suffering economically, because many are educated and not suffering economically. So is it that those people are simply xenophobic? Why did they pick Trump?
There's no simple answer, but there are, I'll give you several answers. First is the most important variable in American voting is party identification. So at the end of the campaign, when the FBI letter came out, we saw Hillary's lead beginning to dissipate. And that's because Republicans were coming home. And Republicans thought, because they thought he had a chance, Trump had a chance to win. And I think that was part of the explanation as to how he got a big share of white women voters. The other answer is, I think that while we thought that Trump's transgressions against women and Muslims and Latinos and everybody was terrible, the voters thought that that was terrible, but they thought that the Hillary's email transgressions and the perception of her elitism and pay-to-play stuff in the Clinton Foundation, the voters equated that with Trump's transgressions, and they sort of neutralized it out. And at the end of the day, you know, the voters are angry. So when the voters are angry, they throw out the perceived incumbent and throw in the challenger. And Trump got to be the change candidate this cycle, because Hillary, her theory of the election was to claim the Obama continuity incumbency mantle. And she did, and the voters punished her. At the end of the day, they punished her for it. Although, let me just say, you know, Hillary still won the popular vote.
Yep.
And it's getting bigger and bigger, her margin. She's going to have 1 million to 2 million vote margin, 1 to 2 percentage points once California gets in. It's only 60% counted. So she, in fact, won the election. She just her blue wall turned into a blue sieve in the upper Midwestern states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania.
Now, what about the fact that the Democrats, particularly under President Obama over the last 8 years, weren't exactly best friends for the immigrant community? Yes, we got DACA, and yes, there was an attempt to put in DAPA for parents of naturalized citizens, but right. President Obama deported more immigrants than any other president in history, earning the moniker of deporter-in-chief. This was something that Trump was able to wave in Clinton's face. Did this play a role in slightly less enthusiasm among Latino voters, making the point that, of course, we are not blaming Latino voters for Trump?
Well, I don't think so, because I suspect that once we get under the Latino numbers, we're going to see that immigrant, naturalized Latino voters were wild for Hillary. There's been a deep affection between immigrants and Hillary for some time, and that's the sector of the Latino community that has been just excited about Hillary. In Spanish media and the immigrant leadership, they love Hillary. Don't ask me to explain that, because I'm a little puzzled by it. Wow. I think the fall off in the Latino vote for Hillary is among millennial Latinos. And it's not that they stayed home, because the Latino vote grew significantly. It's that they may have undervoted, meaning not cast votes at the presidential level, or I think the millennial Latino is where you find the Johnson and Stein vote. And so if you add up Hillary, Johnson, and Stein, it's basically the same vote that Obama got in 12 and 8, same percentage, very close, the same percentage. I just think Hillary couldn't hold millennial Latinos because she didn't have, at the end of the day, she didn't have much of a message except, I'm not Trump.
Right, right. That's a really big one. And overall, voter turnout of among eligible voters was down hugely. Now some of the numbers are coming out. 100 million eligible voters in the U.S., not registered, but eligible voters, sat this election out entirely. General elections are supposed to be where we have higher voter turnout. And even if you look at those people who were, you know, total numbers of people who were attracted to the polls under for President Obama's 2008 election, Obama versus McCain, big turnout. Obama versus Romney, not so big, but still there. Clinton versus Trump, both Republicans and Democrats had lower turnout. There were actually fewer Republicans who voted for Trump than Republicans who voted for Mitt Romney.
Well,
is pretty amazing.
This is the wages of negative campaigning.
Yeah.
If you're going to run negative campaigning, then you're going to get lower turnout and lower participation. Negative campaigning works. The purpose of negative campaigning is to drive your opponent's turnout down. And they were both doing it. So they didn't get the big boost in voter registration, which typically ends 30 days before the election. That's what you're, you know, when you talk about eligible voters, that means people that haven't necessarily registered to vote. So you didn't get that big surge because neither candidate was running an inspirational campaign. You didn't get a big surge in voter registration. The parties didn't invest in mobilizing the vote, unlike Obama, despite their hype. Don't believe the hype. They did insignificant voter registration, and the candidates and campaigns didn't have inspirational messages. They had negative messages. So you didn't get the voter registration bump, and then it got worse in the last month. It was really negative. So a lot of voters, we call them occasional voters, just stayed home. And you had, I heard the figure 10 million. I think that's probably exaggerated. But I think it's fair to say that you'll have no better than the same number of votes cast as 2012, perhaps as bad as 5 million fewer votes cast. And we won't know that until the statement of the vote is certified. There are many votes out there still, probably at least 5 million just in California. So we just don't know what the final count is. But it wasn't your great participatory election by any stretch.
Hmm. What about those silver linings for progressives that did emerge in small, small amounts on election night? One of which was we now have the first Latina senator, first Latina to be on the U.S. Senate, Catherine Cortez Masto from Nevada, which it's you know, sort of assumed that the massive Latino voter turnout in that state really helped her beat Republican Joe Heck to win Harry Reid's seat that he was vacating. How important is that?
Well, it's a little bit of history was made. In general, there's a lot of those kind of silver linings for Latinos and progressives. You see the first Puerto Rican from Orlando, a progressive, Darren Soto from Orlando. Cortez Masto is the first Latina senator from Nevada. I'll give you a twist. Here's a twisted factoid. Joe Hesto probably lost as much. Joe Heck lost as much as because of Latino voter mobilization, but also the fact that he wouldn't support Trump, so he was punished by Trump Republicans. There's one for the history books.
Yeah, but didn't Nevada overall vote for Hillary Clinton? Hillary won Nevada, right?
Hillary won Nevada, and Joe Heck underperformed Trump, and it's because he's punished by Trumpian voters.
Interesting.
He wouldn't support Trump because of the Trump rape tape. And then you got the first Chicano from Las Vegas in Congress, Ruben Kiwin. You got the first Dominican from New York, Manhattan, Adrián Espaillat. You have three new Latinos elected to Congress from California. And then there's all this spate of marijuana legalizations. The war on drugs is coming to an end, I believe. And a spate of minimum wage ballot measures that were successful. So there is some silver lining to this election, and people in states have some significant organizing opportunities in a positive way as a result of some of these results.
Finally, Antonio, going back to the note that we started on, which is attempting to understand the Latino vote, what do you expect for future elections? And let's also remind ourselves, Latinos are an extremely diverse group. They are white and black and indigenous and everything in between. They are from many different countries. If you use the term Hispanic, you include Spaniards. There's so much diversity among Latinos that it is hard to pin down. And I think maybe I'm wondering if attempts to pin it down are futile, or can we see some patterns for the future?
Well, I do think that there is a coherent Latino identity, but it is something that is in flux. There's this open-ended paradigm for Latinos as people come into the country. They enrich our connections with Latin America and the Caribbean, but as they are in America, they become homogenized into a Latino community, which has a, you know, it's by some arguments a 10,000 year year long rootedness in the United States, in the continental United States. So it's an ongoing process of Latinoization in the U.S. But frankly, interestingly, Spanish language is actually down in the Latino community, and English language is actually up. You see a lot of the Spanish language stations putting on English language programming to incorporate the millennials, who are bilingual, but they're dominant English. And you see this homogenization process within Latinos, particularly in millennials, and you can identify that through party identification and issue identification. So we do have we have diversity, but it's within cohesion, and it's an ongoing process. The immigrant share of the Latino vote has actually shrunk. So and most growth in the Latino community demographically is not from migration; it's from natural U.S.-based birth.
Right.
So. Here we go. You know, we do have a constituency. It is coherent, but it has a significant diversity within that coherence.
Well, Antonio, I want to thank you so much for joining us and helping us shed some light on all of these issues. And we hope to have you back on in the future.
It was a great pleasure for me, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Antonio Gonzalez is president of the William C. Velasquez Institute. He's an expert on U.S. Latino voter mobilization and Latino voting characteristics. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.